Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 19. Yaha Vatera Jita Sargo. Yesham Samye Sitamanaha. Nirdosham Hi Samam Brahma. Tasmat Brahmani Te Sitaha. Ihaiva, in this life. Eva, certainly. Tai, by them. Jita, conquered. Sarga, birth and death. Yesham, whose. Samye, in equanimity. Sitam, situated. Manaha, mind. Nirdosham, flawless. He, certainly. Samam, in equanimity. Brahma, like the Supreme. Tasmat, therefore. Brahmani, in the Supreme. Te, they. Sthitaha, are situated. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Purport. Equanimity of mind, as mentioned above, is a sign of self-realization. Those who have actually attained to such a stage should be considered to have conquered material conditions, specifically birth and death. As long as one identifies with his body, this body he is considered a conditioned soul. But as soon as he is elevated to the state of equanimity, the realization of self, he is liberated from conditional life. In other words, he is no longer subject to take birth in the material world, but can enter into the spiritual sky after his death. The Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he becomes also flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. Such persons we consider already liberated. Their symptoms are described below. Yihaivatera jita sargo yesham samye sitamanaha nirdosham hisamam brahma tasmad brahmani te sitaha. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, thus they are already situated in Brahman. Bhagavad Gita is divided into three different parts, according to Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita. First six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, as he says at the beginning of the seventh chapter, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different kinds of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it is clearly explained that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By practice of Krishna conscious yoga, one can never know everything completely, namely the living entity, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice, as explained in the last verse of the sixth chapter, by concentration of the mind upon Krishna is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. In other words, first six chapters, Bhagavad Gita explain about the different types of yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and ultimately astanga yoga. All the middle six chapters are devoted to devotional service. And the last six chapters are the jnana yoga, the philosophical discussions about what will our vision, our knowledge, that will actually fix us in devotional service. So here we're in the fifth chapter. And although there always has to be some element of Krishna consciousness, that is, consciousness of Krishna, but here the emphasis, at least in this, in the preceding verses, is seeing things equally. And seeing things equally is called the nishtha platform, the stage of steadiness in consciousness or self-realization. Brahma-bhuta, prasanatma, nishoshiti, nakangshiti, samaksarveshu bhuteshu, madbhaktim labhate param. In other words, the preliminary qualification in order to actually enter into real devotional service. After the platform of self-realization or nishta, then as one concentrates his consciousness upon Krishna, then he goes, gradually he's able to experience Krishna's presence and feel the transcendental pleasure in relation to Krishna and his devotees, because in the spiritual consciousness, everything is ruchi, everything has a taste. People in the spiritual world, everything is, as it says in the Brahma Samhita, Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataruvo Bhuma Bhumis Chintamani Gayanmani Tamyam Amrita. That the water has Amrita, is like Amrita, and the living entities are all enjoyable and tasteful. That's called ruchi. When one actually has experiences transcendental pleasure in relationship to every living entity, everything, and everything in relationship to Krishna. Then as that intensifies, it comes to the platform of asakti. That is, the taste is so intense, there's so much pleasure in relationship to Krishna and his devotees, that the mind cannot deviate from Krishna consciousness. Maybe it deviates for a second or a moment, but it has to immediately come back to it. Just like a fish can't live without water. Then, at the stage of bhava, then one's natural feelings towards Krishna awaken, and one is on the platform of uttama adhikara, and one's heart begins to become illuminated like the sun, the Prabhupada describes in the Nectar Devotion as the actual platform of uttama adhikara. At that platform, bhava has two symptoms. The heart is melted. What's the other symptom? Various tastes.
Three tastes.
What's that?
Three tastes.
Three tastes. Oh, taste for the name, taste for the form, taste for the pastimes. Is that right?
It's Prapti-bilash, Ankula-bilash, and Sohata-bilash. Strong desire to attain.
Chandira vyakta kala tvam virakta manushunyataha ashabanda samudhata. And three of those are pointed out as significant, I guess. Yeah, anyhow, there are certain qualifications, but the main qualification is the heart melts and one feels unlimited effect. One's original relation with Krishna is awakened. One actually enters into one's spiritual identity at that point. And one is actually beginning to participate to some degree or another, depending on the stage of bhava and its intensity, in Krishna's pastimes. And bhava is considered to be one ray, anukora of prema. One ray in the sunlight of prema. And then after that, then rasa, at the stage of rasa, which is the combination of different types of bhava, such as sthayi bhava, the vyavichari bhakta, satvika bhava, anubhava. What's the first one?
Vibhava.
So it's a combination of them together, which sthayi bhava is the principal one. And then after that, then one's actual relationship develops to the stage of sneha, mana, pranaya, bhava, anubhava, raga, anuraga, and then finally mahabhava has two stages. And each progressively more intense. So how can we understand? We can't understand. We can't even understand what ruchi is, what to speak. What nishtha would be nice. Understand. In any case, we should know something about this, at least theoretical, and know so we can get some idea. It's fixed the mind upon Krishna. And part of that is to try to gain the same vision as the scriptures have. because they give us the intelligence by which we can control the mind and senses. The very sound vibration gives us the power to control the mind and senses, if we accept it. And accepting it means, as I said, it comes in different stages. One, to hear it. One, to try to remember it. The other is to try to understand it, try to see it, and then try to practice according to that vision. Try to practice it, and then Krishna, when he sees that we're actually sincere, because at every stage, didadami, buddhi, yogam, tam, Krishna has to give us intelligence at every stage. So spiritual intelligence comes in different stages. So just to hear, just be here, required intelligence to come here, and some determination, and some enthusiasm to come here. But not a whole lot sometimes. We find people devotees falling asleep, and you walk out of class, you can't remember anything, can't understand why he gave the class in the first place, what the whole thing was about. So our intelligence has to be developed to the point that we're trying to not only just hear, but we're actually trying to hear to try and understand what the whole thing is about. So we can develop a vision. Here the vision is equanimity, to try to not get caught up. This is my friend, this is my enemy, this is a woman, this is a man. Try to remember that everyone is Krishna's servant, including myself. Not that everyone else is Krishna's servant and I'm the master. That I'm also the servant, and therefore I should try to come to associate with the devotees in a state of equanimity. Therefore, Prabhupada was most concerned, especially when the devotees would fight with each other. And why do devotees fight with each other? Does anyone know? What's the root cause of devotees fighting with each other? What's that? Well, that's certainly it. What are the two habits the Western world especially cultivates? The two things that they're very expert. How does that manifest? Well, I'll tell you, because maybe it's too vague the question. Prabhupada said they like to fight with each other. And usually the root cause is sex desire. I'm Tarzan, you're Jane. All these other monkeys here I'm going to have to conquer. That's the root. That's the. They're into sex in the West. I mean, the whole world is into that nowadays. And fighting, because if there's sex desire, there's going to be envy, and if there's envy, there's going to be fighting. She's mine, or she's mine, or he's mine, or he's mine. They'll fight with each other. And then they'll fight to get someone. And then after they get them, they'll fight with each other to get someone else. Because the whole thing is caused by lust, greed, and anger, which is manifested as sex desire and fighting. The problem is that the West, especially in the Western world, because nowadays the Western world is everywhere, through the mercy of the internet and Bollywood now, it's everywhere. Fighting and sex, those are the two things. That previously these things were not so much emphasized as they are now. At least most people weren't really into, maybe during the Roman times they had the gladiator sport. I mean, after the start of Kali Yuga, it all went downhill. Now, in order to overcome that, the relationships with devotees is very important, that one should give up this tendency to become influenced. Because it's just an influence. If we have the vision, just like there was a bull, old bull, and a lion in the jungle. And the lion had some advisors. They were jackals. Mm-hmm. And the bull and the bull's a powerful animal, and him and the lion made a deal that they wouldn't fight with each other. So that deal went on, but then there was a big famine in the whole country, and there was no food available for the lion anymore. And so all the jackals didn't get any remnants from the lion, and they all becoming weak. And the lion was a little older also. So the jackals got together and they made a plan that they were going to get the lion to attack the bull, and they could kill the bull and then eat the bull. But they couldn't just tell the lion to attack the bull because they already made an alliance. So what they did is they told the lion that actually the bull has a plan, he's hungry, and he has a plan to kill you and then eat you. And you'll be able to understand that because as soon as he sees you, he's going to put his horns down and, to attack you. So you should attack him first. And then they went to the bull and said, actually the lion's very angry, he's hungry, and he has a plan to eat you. So as soon as you see the lion, you better, you know, protect yourself. And that way they made the arrangement. Of course, when the lion came in contact with the bull and the bull saw the anxiety on the lion's face, it concluded that the lion wanted to attack him. So he put down his horns to defend himself. The lion said, we asked the jackals to write, he's going to attack me. So then the lion jumped on the bull and killed him, and then they ate him. So that's material life. We have a preconception that these people are out to get me, and therefore I have to be very careful. And then they look at my face and they see I'm full of anxiety. They think, yeah, it's true. This devotee is out to get me. And then there's a fight. And that's Kali Yuga. Instead of sameness and equanimity, we're influenced by our preconceptions called conditioning. That's what conditioning is. That when I went to college, my major was psychology, which it was a particular kind of psychology because they were trying to get people to become humanists. And psychology is a major. Humanist means no God, some mechanical conception of how things work. So the main humanist, of course, comes from that we're just animals. We're just, we've come through the evolutionary cycle, and we just act like animals. So Pablo showed that if you ring a bell and then you give some food to dogs, then the dogs will, as soon as they'll salivate. So you just condition them to identify the bell with the food. And after a while, you just have to ring the bell, and the dogs produce saliva because they're conditioned. It's called stimuli and reflex, condition reflex. So their idea is that human beings are just animals. You supply the stimuli, and then you get the reaction. Now there's no. Now we've heard this term called proactive. What proactive means is that we can go beyond being animals. Proactive doesn't mean you do something first. Someone's going to hit you and you hit them before they hit you. That's not what proactive means. Proactive means that before you respond to the stimuli, you think of how to respond. Now, if you have some knowledge, then you can think about how to respond, and then the memory brings up the knowledge and you respond with knowledge. That's what this whole chapter is about. Now, if you have no knowledge, all you can do is remember, yeah, he said something bad about me yesterday, so I should attack him first. If that's what you think about it, then you think, yeah, there's a good reason to attack him first. But that's not proactive. Proactive means to actually have higher knowledge, higher intelligence, and instead of reacting with one's, due to one's conditioned nature, react according to spiritual instruction. Then one can be situated in equanimity and not simply react. That's this second chapter, 70th verse. Aporyamanam achala pratishtam samudyam apa pravishanti advat tadvat kamiyam pravishanti sarve sa shantimat noti nakama kami. Person is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into an ocean which is always being filled and always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desire. So we take the accumulation of knowledge we have already, and then as the thoughts go through our mind, examine them in relationship to Krishna consciousness. Of course, we're not supposed to just sit there and watch our thoughts all day long. But the idea is we choose the thoughts, the knowledge, we choose the idea of what we're supposed to do. Our emotions we choose according to our Krishna consciousness rather than according to our reactive nature, according to the modes of material nature. So we have to identify both. So that in the 14th chapter, Krishna says, actually, what's the first verse in the 14th chapter? Bhagavad Gita. Parambhuya Parakshami Gyananam Gyanam Uttama Yajgatvamunaya Sarve Param Siddhima Iti Gata. Now explain to you knowledge better which I've explained to any before. And knowing which so many sages have become liberated. Now Krishna is in the 10th chapter, he says this is the best knowledge. The 12th chapter, he says this is even better knowledge. 13th chapter, now I'll explain everything so clearly. In the 14th chapter, just forget about, he doesn't say forget about everything else. He said, now I'm going to explain to you better knowledge than I've explained before. Now how is it possible? He's explained confidential knowledge, he's explained more confidential knowledge, and in the 9th chapter he's explained the most confidential knowledge. And immediately he says in the 12th chapter, now I'm explaining better knowledge, and now in the 14th chapter I'm going to explain the best knowledge. So Krishna probably, did he forget what he said? Arjuna said, wait a second, Krishna, I'm confused. No. It's the better knowledge for us. The best knowledge is what he explains twice in Bhagavad Gita, the Manmana Bhava Madhakto. That's the best knowledge. But for us, as we can see, we don't accept this knowledge so easily. So it may not be the best for us. But what we can accept is what is right in front of our face. If we can't accept that knowledge, then, you know, we're just animals, that's all. And there's no sense reading Bhagavad Gita, you know. Because if you're an animal and you can't understand something which is right before you, then there's nothing anyone can do for you. Give them some prasadam. Someone can't understand that there are 1, 2, 3 modes of nature. And that there is mode of ignorance, sleep, laziness, illusion, delusion. There's passion, hankering, and running after material things. And then there's goodness, seeing things with equanimity, trying to understand knowledge, real knowledge, the difference between oneself and the body. So there's 3 modes. And there is 3 classes of people under those 3 modes. And some of them are trying to become elevated, such as those who are Shudras and Vaishyas and Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. And some are going downward. They may have achieved some platform, but because they're Mudhas, Diskritinas, Naradamas, and Maya Pritigyanas, because they're foolish, because they're sinful, because they're deceitful, and because they're atheistic. Therefore, they're going the opposite way from progress. Haranyakashipu achieved great achievements, but by controlling his mind and senses. After all, who could have been more practicing in a state of equanimity than him? I mean, if I had some ants crawling over my desk, but I didn't, you know, go ahead and have a good time, I'd gather them all up and throw them out. But he had ants all over his body eating him. And he was pretty in equanimity, but he was a demon. So his idea, because he's an asura bhava mashkitya, he's an asura, was utilizing this achievement to conquer the universe. And eventually, if he could kill God, as he tried with Nrsingadev. So equanimity is certainly part of the process of making advancement. We have to practice it because we have a higher goal. That is to actually become conscious of Krishna and to spread Krishna consciousness. But we can't concentrate on Krishna if we keep on maintaining these wrong ideas within our consciousness. So therefore we have to be able to see, is this idea in the mode of ignorance? Is it in a mode of passion? Is it at least in the mode of goodness? And is this a spiritual idea? And then choose the spiritual idea. Although the material nature will say, oh, don't choose that, you know. You'll get into trouble and people won't like you and it's not the popular idea now. And no one else chooses that idea. Don't be so radical. So one has to use this, develop discrimination, see what the ideas are, what the Krishna in the 18th chapter goes over, intelligence in the mode of goodness, faith in the mode of goodness, in the modes of nature, etc. So we have to learn these things so we can examine ourselves and see how to get out of ignorance of passion, how to accept at least goodness, or better than that, is spiritual goodness, Krishna consciousness, and work on that platform. React to our situation, because we have so many situations, so many opportunities. Some of them are just normal. In other words, when we're just in normal routine, then generally we get lazy and apathetic and familiar. And then we just react. We just, you know, yeah, now I have to go listen to class, and I'll try and tolerate the whole thing. Now it's time to take prasadam, and, you know. So we just mechanically go through it because it's just routine, unless we're put into some difficulty. Then hopefully we've gained enough knowledge that we start looking into our memory bank and realize we should rely on Krishna, pray to Krishna and help me. Give me the intelligence that Guru is giving me, that Sadhu is giving me, that Shastra is giving me. Help me remember these things so I know how to properly react to the circumstance. The ideal circumstance would be if we were liberated and we had a taste for these things and we were so much in ecstasy all the time we couldn't stop forgetting it. But when we're in the state of anartha nivritti or even bhajana kriya, anishtanta bhajana kriya, then we have to make an effort. We have to use our intelligence to come to the stage of liberation where devotional service becomes spontaneous. And that means we have to develop discrimination. What are the different thoughts going through my mind? What are my options? How does one act with one's body as Krishna's dead buddhiya, sadatmanas? What is intelligence in the mode of goodness? What is intelligence in the mode of passion? What is intelligence in the mode of ignorance? And then see what mode I'm acting on. Watch ourselves acting. Watch our thoughts. Watch our conceptions. Watch ourselves acting. And then if we're doing the wrong thing, it would just be pretty hard for the conditioned soul to swallow that he ever did anything wrong. In other words, sincerity means that we should be open to the fact that we may have some imperfection somewhere. So that's a great advancement. And then if we watch out for, oh, all right, maybe I did that wrong. And then see what the alternatives are. And maybe next time when it comes up, then do the right thing. And that way we make progress. And if we don't do that, then we just go, you know, Krishna consciousness is just like every other consciousness. Food's a little bit better, philosophy seems a little bit more sane, but, you know, it's not really that much different from anything else. So we have to overcome that laziness, that apathy, that indifference, and try to use our intelligence through Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and start discriminating our thoughts, our conceptions, our activities, so that we actually become more conscious. We make room for Krishna, to remember Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
It seems that when we come to the practice of devotional service, of spiritual life, we hear about the need to avoid such attachment or attraction and hatred, and then it can manifest in some rather inappropriate or unpalatable forms. It can be either can turn to apathy, that I should deaden myself to, you know, all desires and feelings, and sometimes the result becomes that I become apathetic. On one hand, on the other hand, sometimes we see that we think I should always do what I hate, because I shouldn't hate, so therefore I shall do what I hate, and that's the proof that I'm advanced. And the result is that I just act as an angry person. live as an angry person. So how does one find the proper area of application of overcoming that attraction and hatred, where it is actual practice and it's real, not artificial, and when our avoiding attraction and hatred is an artificial exercise that leads to such unwanted results?
Well, I think Prabhupada has given the formula that those who, that we have something to, a challenge, that is, to become Krishna conscious, but also we have the challenge to spread Krishna consciousness, which is part of our process of becoming Krishna conscious. So we should find out what our abilities are, what our inspirations are, and then that should be put into a challenge to actually rise up to that challenge by becoming, by our sadhana, by becoming more reliant on Krishna. So we're set with every new challenges. And that challenge ultimately is channeled not only to become to a higher and higher level of Krishna consciousness, to challenge ourselves, but also to make the whole world Krishna conscious, to do whatever we can. Now, if the organizers of the society don't create a vision for the society, that everyone knows where they fit into the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's all kind of vague, and no one really knows, no one's really challenged to come, you know, distribute more books, or make more devotees, or expand the deity's property, to purify people's hearts so they become more and more devotees are engaged in the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actively utilizing their wealth, their words, their whole lives in Krishna's service. Unless we have that challenge, then it becomes dull. Because no one else, we look around, everyone else is just as dull as I am. And the leaders aren't challenging us. Their vision is, you know, it's all right, we got enough to eat here. You know, a few people are coming to the temple and everything's cool, don't worry about it. Then it'll never last like that. If that's what we're going to leave this in the next generation, they'll become even more dull than we are. They'll forget, actually, the enthusiasm of the missionary spirit, the service attitude, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement.
Then, to follow up, then what would be a challenge overdone when it breaks person's health or something? What's the other extreme?
Well, we have to do it according to scripture. Atyahara prayasascha prajalpa niyamagraha. It's not, I mean, probably, you can see Prabhupada's life, because he was over 70 and he had to start a whole worldwide mission, movement, so he had to sacrifice something, and to a certain extent he sacrificed his health. But he also showed, he chanted Hare Krishna, he lived a very regulated life, and he took care of his health the best he could. So it's a balance, it's a question of balance. We should be challenged, but we should be challenged to become balanced also. Because without balance, we won't set a good example for others. And we're not trying, we understand Krishna is going to save the world, not us. That neither were the controllers, nor were the enjoyers, nor were we actually the saviors. But we have to try and act as an instrument for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And part of that is to develop love for Krishna. And try to give that to others, which is part of that process. Otherwise, if we don't try and help others, we don't try to cooperate with, amongst ourselves, we don't try to help others, and we'll look at them enviously. We'll look at them in the wrong, if we can't see them as Krishna's eternal servant, at least theoretically, and understand that Krishna wants us to help them go back to Godhead, then we'll see them in some other vision. And we won't go back to Godhead either. Because we'll have to come back until we learn that vision. Because that's the vision of a Madhyama Adhikari. That's the preliminary vision we have to have before we can come to the platform of liberation, even Brahman realization. So we can't see who's innocent and trying to help them then we're just hard-hearted. And we're going to stop right there in our spiritual advancement. But it has to be explained. Most of us are pretty dull. We have to reorganize a clear vision, clear understanding, and then it has to be organized so everyone effectively can work cooperatively, harmoniously, and produce something tangible, something which is actually giving the results. More books distributed, more devotees being made, more systematic development of Krishna consciousness from those devotees who are made. So they come to the platform where they actually become more and more working harmoniously, more and more enthusiastic to spread Krishna consciousness with the intelligence and the spiritual power to do so. Then we know we're working effectively. Anything else? Yes.
We should be challenged. Krishna advises us in Bhagavad Gita in few places from engaging in great endeavors. So how...
Endeavoring in what?
But this how it's called Sarva Aramba Parityagi in 12 chapters, as he likes the one who doesn't engage in great endeavors.
No.
He doesn't say the
12th chapter?
Yeah, some 15 verse. 15, I think. Sarva Aramba Parityagi, something like this, I think. It's,
well, you know. if he's saying that, it means material endeavors.
That's my question.
In the 12th, Krishna gives the qualities of a devotee. And
15 verse, I think. But anyway,
Sixteen. Devotee is not dependent on the ordinary course of activity. Is pure expert without cares, free from all pains, not striving for some result.
Yeah. Okay.
We're not striving for a result in terms of our own personal result.
Yeah. What should our when being challenged? What should our vision be? What is our motivation? What is certainly
please
not passion?
Krishna. Okay. Because we're doing this because Krishna wants. I mean, we want to go back to Godhead because we want to be blissful, full of knowledge, and eternal. So why shouldn't we wish that to others too? If you're dealing with something, what would you want them to? What result would you want? Wouldn't you want them to become full of bliss, full of knowledge, and eternal? Realize that. So that's what the result will look. That's what Krishna wants, and we should have the same desire him. But we shouldn't have our own personal result. You know, I want to get money from him or sell him a book, so that when I come back, they read my score, and people realize how empowered I am. That shouldn't be the result of what, you know. You can go to hell, but I'm going to become famous. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita, ki jai. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Kaur Premanande.